You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. And we are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. I am joined by the hireling Greg Lenz. How are you, Greg?
I'm feeling very German.
Also joining us is Aaron Ewart. Aaron, how are you?
Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. And then Harry Price joins us, too.
Hi, all.
Hey-o. And then Tad Western, you old son of a bitch.
Oh, Tad hanging chat, slang him Western.
Yeah. This Tad Western thing, I love.
Correct. Thanks. I love myself, too, if you can't tell.
I know. Well, Tyler Weiss is now, he converted himself into Tad Western, and he's created a whole character, a whole pseudonym.
He's a real Belinda Ewart, if you will.
And it's, but it's great. It's great. He rides off into the sunset every night with a meme.
This is not, and I repeat, this is not an act.
He's taking communion.
I have a little bottles of grape juice.
Did little Jeff Vibbert leave this here?
No, those are mine because, listen, I like grape juice a lot, but I rarely drink it.
You got to mix that with water.
But
sorry for drinking your one.
No, it's okay, but I have a bunch of them because I just don't drink a lot of them, but I don't, if I get the one thing and I open it, it spoils, so I get the little bottles.
Big.
Right.
And that is like really
thick.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, that is.
It's good shit.
Yeah, I should probably drink some water with that.
Yeah.
Cut that a little bit.
It is the night before the inauguration.
The coronation?
We're being heckled by Republicans from the Capitol Grill.
Some very
astute.
I tell you, I'm a little bit hurt.
Why?
Because, you know, I wasn't given the thumbs up as a homosexual male, but Aaron was.
Aaron was.
You
That's
know,
right.
Those two log cabin Republicans, Mark Warner and Bob Starkey, were very attracted to Aaron Ewart.
Hold on. So let's say that again. We'll snap that shoe. What did you just say, Greg?
Those two log cabin Republicans, Mark Warner and Bob Starkey, were very attracted to Aaron Ewart, not me. I feel slut shamed.
But I mean, look at that fade.
I mean, how can you blame him?
That's the Nazi undercut.
So our friends in the Indiana GOP, they are out there for the election. And it's so funny to see all these Republicans who were not Trump fans and did not support Trump and kind of gritted their teeth through the election. All of them. And I'm not saying Mark and Bob are like that, but I'm saying a lot of Indiana Republicans, you know, now that Mike Pence is vice president, they're all like, yay, this is so exciting. I'm going out to the
MAGA,
inauguration.
MAGA.
Make America great again.
And I've always loved America.
You couldn't have disliked Trump more and talked more crap about him. Meanwhile, Rob Kendall's not at the inauguration. Nobody invited him.
He could have gone if he wanted to, but this whole inclusion of the Indiana GOP really ruined a lot of the enjoyment of Trump for Rob.
Rob's a funny character.
I love Rob.
He's a little odd. I'm thinking he might be a little Aspie, maybe autistic.
If we like him, he's on the spectrum.
You were talking today about autism and libertarians, and you said we needed a test, and I didn't get a chance.
Self-awareness alert systems, like a life alert. But when we are being full Aspie, something that goes off and says, dial it back.
Here's the thing. I think every libertarian just ought to recognize that they are autistic, and they should just dial it back.
Dial back the screeching, kids.
Altogether.
Oh, it was hilarious. It got into a full-on onslaught of a battle of research methodology. And from a study from 1980 on educational outcomes, and it was just like, guys, lock it up.
Research methodology.
I know, right?
There's nothing ladies like more than when you like every single picture they post and every single status they post, and then argue with your friends about research methodology.
Stop it.
It's a real panty dropper.
What are we talking about?
Women. You wouldn't be interested in this, no. Tad Western.
I got cattle to wrangle.
That's why Spangle's apartment looks like there's been snail trails all through, straight to the bedroom.
I don't look at any research methodology whatsoever. I light the fire, I bring them over, we Netflix and chill, and then she wonders, did he even have Netflix?
He must have spent like $50 on that fire. It made me feel really special.
That's what those are Dolce and Gabbana logs.
That's like a $6 fire starter.
Those seven.
He's got a $20 pile of logs from the cards.
Forest scented.
Listen, that's a $6.99 batch of logs over there that you're looking at. All right.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not.
$6.99
for that. That is quality birch.
You could fill this living room for $60.
But see, I don't want to do that.
Okay.
It has to be scented. It's like and bagged perfectly with two little handles.
It's like the grape juice.
No roly polies falling out, no spiders.
It's like the grape juice. I don't need 1,800 cubits of wood on my back porch. Quartz. I need just a little bit of wood to go in that. So when I feel like I wanna, I'm not in the fire mood lately.
It's another symptom of low T. Little wood next to the fireplace.
I'll show you little witness to the fireplace.
When was the last time you grilled meat?
I can grill, my friend.
Turn off the lights.
Real grill meat.
And light a candle.
It's been a while. I haven't had a lady over here to look at my fire. Oh, yeah. No.
Cat knocked
I'm bringing
off
you
table.
One next time I come over.
No, I have some in the bedroom.
Ooh. What's your favorite scent?
Tom Griswold.
It is the Yankee Candle Beach. It's like beach and sand or something. It's like tan, and it smells like suntan lotion. Ugh.
Oh,
yeah.
So did he say he likes beaches?
Yeah.
That movie, Beaches?
Yes. Bette Midler. I love Bette Midler.
Anytime the woman comes home with the from the tanning salon, I give her the bedroom eyes because that smell.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So it's magical. It's a magical candle. I've made many loves to women. Right in front of that candle, it's Yankee Candle beach scented suntan lotion. Tad knows what I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
He has a lot.
I don't use lotion.
That's why you look like a shoe mitt.
I have a
baseball mitt.
I'm a man's man.
Yes,
I wear a cowboy hat. Keep the sun on my face. I don't need suntan lotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a farmer's tan.
You do. Let's see it.
You're the son of a third generation farmer.
Holy shit. I have never seen a farmer's tan like that.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
It's great.
Oh, it looks like hairy on your arms, and then it looks like me on your nipples.
When I go to the public pool, they call me wife beater. Because it looks like I'm wearing a wife beater.
Oh.
And I beat my wife. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have a wife.
Old son of a bitch, Tad Western.
He'll get you.
So, yes, we are being trolled by Republicans who are awaiting the coronation of Donald Trump, one of them looks like the villain from Despicable Me, our good friend Mark, and the other one is Bob, Richard Starkey. He is a poor man's Ringo Starr, that's for sure. You know, on this episode, we want to talk about a little bit of Obama's legacy. So I brought in the experts, okay? I brought in all of the finest minds that work on We Are Libertarians. I brought you Aaron Ewert, who has been alive during the Obama's presidency. He was there for it.
Very much so.
Yep. You were at that time part of the Ron Paul revolution when Barack Obama won, were you not?
I've got a Ron Paul sweatshirt I just had to take off because it was covered in crawl space dirt. Out of the car.
I've brought in Tad Western, who Tad Western lived in Hawaii with Barack Obama and his brother-in-law, Malik Obama.
I did. Me and Malik still talk.
Malik
on a
is best Obama.
Basis. He is the best Obama.
Tad is Malik's Twitter advisor.
Consultant.
Yeah. Okay. We shoot things back and forth in private emails.
Tad writes all of Malik Obama's shit posts.
I write the ones that he doesn't tweet out. They're like, oh, I can't, yeah, okay, can't tweet that.
He's like, this is too spicy, my man.
Spicy Pepe is what he likes.
I like
to call
how
him.
You just pretended he was Jamaican.
I was the one that, yeah, I was the one that suggested he doesn't use the clicks and the clacks in on Twitter. But
yeah, well, you know, because he thinks it's a telegram. That's what he was saying. He
wasn't Morse code. If you will.
He wasn't saying like bone in the nose African. He was saying
gotcha,
Morse
not
code,
tootsies yeah. and watootsies.
What are we talking? No.
And then I brought in Harry Price, who's black.
Yes.
And yep, so, so he's got that covered.
85% black.
And then Greg Lenz, who knows everything, it's about politics,
the Mensch.
I don't know about that. I was just, you know, I'm still recovering from, you know, basically being called ugly by two straight Republicans.
I know they wondered if Aaron and I were gay, but they didn't wonder if you were gay.
No, they specifically said ew, and then said Aaron Ewart and gave him the thumbs up.
It's
gave him the Clinton look.
Yeah,
I feel your pain.
Bit their bottom lip and said, "Ooh, hey."
Yeah, Mark Warner goes to a church with my ex pastor, so I'll be giving him a little private message later.
Not very Christ-like, wasn't
it?
No,
I mean he does run a recovery group at that church, and I think that they might be able to pray the gay away for Mark.
I'll tell you the truth: I think that Vice President Pence might want to put him in his electroshock therapy treatment.
This just in from the New York Times as we're sitting here: shocking news. U.S. intelligence agencies are examining intercepted communications and data for links between Donald Trump's associates and Russia.
Ooh.
How many more times do we have to go over this?
I'm scared.
Like, we don't believe you people anymore.
Yeah, I saw it's Scar, his last name, Scarbini or Scarini. Uh-huh. They're specifically trying to request all of his former communications.
Yeah.
And he was a third party strategic consultant and messaging consultant.
Right. So
I mean, it's they're not going to stop.
No.
He went toe to toe with the intelligence community, mm-hmm. and they don't love that.
Ask Martin Luther King, RFK, and JFK what happens when
MLK got the suicide letter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and threatening that if he didn't come out and admit that he was a false prophet, that they were going to publish all the tapes they had on him.
Yeah.
Which are sealed until 2027.
Oh, can't wait for you to troll me on that.
I won't. Yeah. You think I was trolling you. I am someone that I will look at anything, even if it conflicts with my... I don't have any sacred cows.
See, listen.
I don't have any. Like, there isn't a sacred cow.
You can criticize Martin Luther, and I knew what you were doing. You were trying to get a rise out of me because you know how much I love Martin Luther King and how...
But all I was doing was posting articles.
You were shit posting. Cut it out.
I swear to God. Like, yes, it was to irritate you.
You were trying to irritate me. Admit it.
I was. But like, all I was doing, it wasn't like I was doing anything other than posting like legitimate sources.
You were posting. You had gone and hung out with your buddy, the cross-dressing FBI director, J. Edgar Hoover. And he had given you all of the documents.
It's not his fault. His mother dressed him in women's clothes.
If he was shit posting links, what the hell was I doing?
You were just shitposting.
No,
you weren't even contributing. You were just being a dick.
Yeah.
I just think the facts should be presented and everyone else should be eligible to make up their own mind based
on
a comprehensive review of said facts.
I understand and I'm aware that Martin Luther King cheated on his wife. Everybody knew that. I mean, there were regular discussions about that within the SCLC.
If you follow the Bible, you know that Jesus said that if you even look at another woman, you've cheated on your wife in your own heart. So haven't we all?
Right. King David.
The real
King
point,
was a
I'm not married.
The actual point I didn't get around to making because all of a sudden what I was doing was not intended to troll you initially, and then it turned into that. But what I was doing was I was going to make the comment that he wouldn't have been possible in today's society.
No, there's no
way.
We
love to see, you know, fallen icons and
Absolutely.
Fallen angels. And so MLK would have been crucified and people would have celebrated.
Where would they put all
the
bad
spectrum?
Neighborhoods? Like,
what?
If he never existed. Like.
I like to think that Anthony Weiner was today's Martin Luther King.
Well, no, Chuck Schumer is every bit as scumbag as much of a scumbag as Anthony Weiner.
Right.
Perhaps even worse, except he rose to prominence in an era where there wasn't Twitter, there wasn't 24/7. Yep.
They're
know,
all like
leaking.
That.
Right, like I'm going to be shocked to see like senators that are long term from our millennial generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if there's even the slightest little scandal or media scandal, it's going to be picked up and played 24/7.
Look at Tommy Lauren.
Well, I think it's going to go
Tommy Lauren. Yeah.
Though.
Yeah, so you gotta have someone like James Newsom,
pop that pee, baby.
Who controls their like who cares.
Her producer is a really a girl,
care.
A really good friend of mine. A girl I used to date.
Everybody talk one at a time. Harry, you first, and then we'll go to Tommy Lauren.
I'm just saying, like most probably, like the coming senators will have to be more like James Newsom. They have to actually one own it and just keep doing it. It's like, yes, I did that. Your point is, I'll do it again. Do it
like
do it tomorrow.
Trump.
Yeah,
like Trump. Yeah, Tommy,
lean in,
Tommy Lauren,
Trump, niece, you know, whoever you want.
She was just a basic sorority bitch, you know, tweeting out her, you know, talking about fucking guys and doing all, you know, 3 years ago, and everybody's freaking out over it. It's like, mm-hmm. well, yeah, guess what? She probably fucked some dudes in college like every other girl has.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just because she's a conservative doesn't mean that she's out there. She, I don't know. I don't watch her. So she may be promoting herself as the great Christian hope, but...
Well, she's trying to be Ann Coulter 2.0.
Maybe she's changed. Maybe she's not fucking guys anymore. I'm sure she is, but...
Christian conservatism isn't a... part of her message. She's more of just a radical. She's like Ann Coulter. No one calls Ann Coulter a moral leader, but they look to her to be as the head of the snake for the GOP for you know trashing liberals.
Trust me,
more like Medusa.
I work in the radio industry. If you want stories on Laura Ingraham, I've got some killer stories on Laura Ingraham, Essie Cupp, Ann Coulter. I mean,
Dana Lash, I'm sure.
And they've never promoted themselves as that. And like, I think it's an unreal expectation that the right has that you have to fit into that mold where you have to be this, you know, upstanding. Like, that's why I love the Bad Christian Podcast. I don't know. If you're a Christian, you should check it out. And it's just guys who are like, listen, I talk like this in my regular life. I'm a pastor. And I feel like I'm lying if I'm trying to. Now, of course, the guy has been fired from every church he's worked at because he says fuck on his podcast, on a Christian podcast. But,
Jesus fucking Christ.
But their point is that you can choose authenticity or you can choose to be accepted by a Christian culture. And there is no in between. And that's the thing about Donald Trump is I don't really know what is authentic or not. But the guy owns a lot of it and says, like, eh. This is me. What did you expect?
I'm not going anywhere, so you might as well either get used to it or ignore me.
Mm-hmm. Been to the gym 3 times a week since for the last month.
Good job,
Chris. I'm very disappointed. I have not heard in the locker room one grab her by the pussy.
Well, you start evangelizing.
Somebody's going to do the locker room talk, I'm going to have to start get it started.
You're the radio host. You have a great voice.
Yeah.
Here you can lure some pussy in there, probably.
That would be a good bit.
Here, pussy, 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 pussy.
We don't need to lure it in there. We just talk about it. That's what we do.
No.
That's what the guys do in the locker room. We talk about grabbing pussies.
Guys,
not the YMCA. The YMCA is the beta male workout facility, whereas LA Fitness is the alpha male.
You fucking scumbag.
Actually, Gold's Gym is the true alpha male's workout facility.
Lots of grunts.
I used to work out at the Gold's Gym in Plainfield.
Meatheads only.
I
you were a boxing
it.
Champion there.
I loved it.
True story, I was at a Gold's Gym one time, and I was running on the treadmill, and a guy was bench pressing, and he had a woman sitting on his face, and he was eating that shit.
Bench pressing a woman?
Yeah, that's a really... That's,
ultimate alpha.
That's yeah.
That's how
you got to stay away from those places in L.A.
You got to get your protein, man.
Yeah. He was having a protein shake and getting his pump on.
Getting swole.
God.
I don't know how we got
it here.
I don't either because I know how we can segue.
Can you trace this back?
I can't. Barack Obama's leaving.
Right.
Barack Obama.
Speaking of pussies.
Yeah. Well, no, that's the thing is Barack Obama is the modern male. He is the Jimmy Fallon. He is the John Oliver, the John Stewart, the cucky beta male with enough side of feels and wit and snark that is the new cool. It's the Spider-Man and comic book effect of on America. John Wayne isn't cool anymore. He's a cis white male scumbag, and Seth Meyers is the highest level of maledom you can achieve. Or like that's kind of the way culturally society had morphed. And Donald Trump was he's the absolute rejection of that entire like feminization of men.
He couldn't. He's so far over the top into the fake alpha bullshit.
Right, he's the unapologetic, chauvinistic, nationalistic, chest beating, you know, we're everything that every liberal was ever, who's ever gone to college has ever been taught to hate.
He is your drunk uncle. Right. You know, where Barack Obama is the cool uncle with the horn-rimmed glasses that shows up, who teaches at the local college.
Yep. And then and he's then, got a really popular photography blog.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's the uncle-in-law that mm-hmm. shows up. But
he
then,
listens to jazz and smokes Parliaments.
Right. He talks about, did you hear that new Radiolab episode?
Right, exactly. Right. Like that, and that's what had been cool for, like, that was sort of his election was a, not a death, like, final nail in the coffin of alpha male culture dominating in the United States, but people really didn't. I think a lot of people didn't think a alpha like Donald Trump, over the top, extreme, you know, pseudo alpha would be possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, bombastic, brazen, unapologetic, right. Striking fear into the heart of every woman that, well, you know, enters his circle.
Here's the thing about like the media and the left really want to neuter conservatives.
They do.
And they want to have conservatives as weak as possible.
And I think a lot of people thought with Barack Obama's election, the end of masculine-dominated society was over.
Mm-hmm. And the patriarchy had been overthrown, and every girl who talks about the patriarchy is in full panic mode on your Facebook page tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
My cousin, I love her, but calm the fuck down. Calm down.
Like, she's not listening.
She's definitely not listening to this. If a politician is making you this concerned, panicked, I'm just afraid. Fuck off. You're not afraid.
For my gay friends.
If you're afraid, you're stupid.
Right. Nothing will be noticeably change from tomorrow.
No.
Nothing will noticeably change 8 years from today.
No, that's not true because
I don't know.
Your Democratic friends and all the Democrats on the planet, today, the economy is seeing unprecedented growth, and the country has never been in better shape. But tomorrow, all hell's breaking loose, and the country is in dire need.
Oh, they already set that up today.
Today, your Republican friends, everything is dire and is falling to hell. Tomorrow, unprecedented growth, and everything is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how everybody puts their signs on the ground, walks across the street, and picks the other guy's signs up in the span of 5 minutes.
Yep. And the really interesting part is that I was thinking about like the New York Times and a lot of the major left, you know, that now are left leaning organizations,
right.
And so much of their content lately has been about journalism and how it's, you know, the need to be responsible and continue to hold Trump accountable,
right.
Like they don't have an agenda.
Liberal cucky, right. Navel gazing,
right? Like they've had an agenda media. This entire time,
absolutely.
And so like to all of a sudden talk about the credibility of journalism and be worried about what happens in a Trump dominated world. And the outrage that's happening at news organizations that can't make it. It's shocking because they have no intention of changing anyone's mind. Like they preach to the choir.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What Republican goes and reads the New York Times?
Mm-hmm.
What Republican goes and reads, I mean, I read Vox every day,
mm-hmm.
but I don't talk to hardly any Republicans that actually do or have a high opinion of Ezra Klein.
Why should they?
Right. And so everything on virtually all sides of the aisle has become preaching to the choir.
I don't even think most people actually go and read any of that.
No.
I think if they get their
headlines only.
They see it on Facebook and they see what their friends are posting about.
And then they watch John Oliver
man. And that's why we do this in sort of an entertaining podcast way as opposed to like dry news, because I think if you're having fun while you're listening to something, you're more likely to want to engage with what's being said.
Oh, right.
As opposed to a newscast.
That's why Reason does so much better than Cato.
Right.
You know, Cato's sitting out there putting 14-page PDFs on policy positions and critiques of existing policy,
right.
Whereas Reason makes it culturally relevant, and Nick Gillespie and Welch do a really good job of snarky and funny.
Yeah.
You know, so, but even they are more so in that persona of a Seth Meyers or a Jon Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the navel gazing of the journalistic community they're just the most self-righteous pieces of journalists you've ever seen if you ever have friends who work at a local newspaper. I was married to somebody who we started dating and she worked at the local newspaper, and they're all Edward R. Murrow. They're all Woodward and Bernstein. And they all love to talk about the philosophy of journalism.
Like it's and the future like it's of the journalism. Ministry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. It's just very, you know, and you have every journalist friend of mine on Facebook that works for the Indy Star, you know, navel gazing too. And they're just afraid. And she's like, dude, right. What these people don't realize, they didn't get it 8 years ago. If you look back at the way that we felt as libertarians when a statist like Barack Obama was taking over, sure, we had lived under Bush, but it's at the time, the panic and the fear over Obama on the right and in the libertarian movement over Obama was like, he's going to be Bush on steroids and it's going to be FEMA camps. And what were some of the conspiracies about Obama, man? It was just FEMA camps left and right. He was going to come in, and Agenda 21 was going to be all over the place.
Yep.
It was
guns are gone.
Guns are gone. He's going to take all your guns. And gun sales have never been more robust.
He's the greatest thing that ever happened right. to the National Rifle Association and gun manufacturers.
Now it's hard to get bullets because he bought all the bullets for these agencies to drive
FEMA
the price
camps,
up,
man.
Yeah, for the FEMA camps. Them. But, you know, we on the right panicked, like the left is panicking now eight years ago.
Glenn Beck played a big role in that.
Absolutely. Glenn Beck with Van Jones.
He was doing nightly exposés on the Soviet Union and Lenin and Trotsky. And
George Soros George Soros came in and the Rules for Radicals and the Tides Foundation and the Cloud and Piven stuff. I mean, it was very informative. So, you know, it's hard to say to those people, like, yeah, okay, I look at these people and I go, well, you know, I'm 33 and I'm old enough to remember because I was politically involved how panicked we all were 8 years ago, and everything's fine. It's going to be fine. Okay, gays are not going to lose their rights. They're not going to be rounded up into camps. You know, Mike Pence is not going to be starting re-education camps for gays.
He's
going to
be tasering some people.
Heal!
So
be saved!
It's, you know, and that's part of, I think for me, like my own personal experience with Barack Obama started out with, I love the guy. Like I saw him in early 2008 speak to Greg and I went to Plainfield High School. He spoke at our high school and I saw him. I was a quasi journalist at that point. I was producing a radio show, but I was very politically homeless. I was libertarian leaning, but I just couldn't get over the hump. I was just sort of politically homeless. I just couldn't get over the non-interventionist hump.
You're a critical thinking Republican.
Right. And but I definitely was not a Republican. I knew I didn't like those people and didn't fit there. And I saw Barack Obama and I was captivated by his speech. I was captivated by him. He was you know, as somebody who grew up in a 98% white school, who had parents who taught you, you know, don't be racist, you don't treat other people differently. And I think most millennials have that experience where they grew up in a home where you had parents teach you to not treat people differently. So, you know, I looked at Barack Obama and like his skin color wasn't even a consideration for me ever. But his message of racial reconciliation did speak to me. And I thought, oh, this is great. We're going to have a period of he is going to be the post-racial presidency. I truly, like, I knew how that narrative got started after seeing him. Because you just saw him speak and talk about togetherness, and you just believed him. Now, 8 years later, we couldn't be more racially divided.
He punted on playing a part as sort of a, it's politically toxic because then he becomes, you know,
Uncle Tom.
That becomes the only thing about him or he becomes Uncle Tom. And so even though we had such racial tensions and that was more a byproduct of economics than anything. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't want to get into that. And, you know, that wasn't his experience either. This is a guy that, you know, born in Hawaii, then spent time with his stepdad in Indonesia, and then you know he's the multicultural globally raised child, not a byproduct of, you know, he isn't someone that really talked about marching at Selma like a John Lewis.
He if you watch, there's a bunch of Netflix biography movies now, and one was Barry, and I watched that about his time, you know, getting to Harvard. And you get this sense that here's a guy who, you know, he didn't grow up a black American like Harry.
No.
You know, he grew up across the world.
And his dad was, from Kenya.
His dad was from Kenya. His mom was white. And he didn't have any identity, let alone a racial identity. But yet when he was treated differently because of the color of his skin. And so he had to apply that big brain of his towards this issue. So I think that he doesn't view it the way that a lot of the, you know, the race pimps.
Politico did a really neat article talking about how it was funny to watch him when he was coming up the campaign trail in Iowa and in Boston, because his other half is Irish Catholic.
Yeah.
It's his mom's side. And so he was more at home, like, with the Irish Catholic, you know, union type blue collar Democrats than he ever was with the John Lewis and the Maxine Waters, and going into the even though he was in Chicago and a community organizer, he just was really more comfortable on the campaign trail eating corn in Iowa at the state fair than he ever was going and talking about some of the things that he was associated with through his relationship with Jeremiah Wright, the black liberation theology, the more extreme movements of the early Black Lives Matters movement.
Yeah, I think if you check that movie out, Barry, it kind of illustrates that. I don't know how accurate it is. Some of what I read, it said it's very inaccurate, but I think it does give you a little flavor. Harry, you are black.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that you have some thoughts on Obama's legacy when it comes to race.
Well, a couple of things. I do appreciate Obama because he did do a lot of great work for getting respect in the black community for quote unquote white talking black guys.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped hearing a lot of that. Oh, you talk white. Now I get you talk like Obama, and most people are kind of okay with it now and
really
kind of leave me alone. Yeah.
That's an interesting.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That happens. And a lot of people's like, that doesn't happen. Like, it happens to me every time I meet most black men my age. If they're older, then I don't really get it that much. But mostly like the younger ones, especially if I go like I was playing basketball with some of the younger kids, and they were like, "Oh, you sound like Obama." It was refreshing because usually I get you sound like a white guy. And before anyone goes like, "Well, you probably have the same experience," but no,
I think you'd be more insulted being compared to such a huge status like that.
It is, but it's better than you just getting called just like, "You sound like a white guy." Well, to me personally, I sound like me. I went through a lot of speech classes to sound like this because I used to grow up with a huge stuttering problem.
Mm-hmm.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So did Joe Biden. That's how he had fought a stuttering problem into his early 20s.
Yeah, I was able to get over mine in elementary school, public school. That's before public school here in Indianapolis got too bad.
Right.
But
ironically,
you went to Northwest when it was still a school that you didn't worry.
It was on its way down when I was on my way out of there. I remember the main reason I joined the football team because one of the first days I was there, I watched somebody put a soda can and a tube sock and hit someone inside the head.
Whoa.
Tad.
Make sure
it wasn't me.
I'm going to get on the football team.
Yeah.
Get some meat.
And then you also played golf.
Yeah, did golf. I did football. I was also on the chess club. I also ran the D&D game there, and I was also in French club. I
thought you said you were trying not to get beat up.
I'm a 6-foot black guy that easily...
He doesn't lift because he gets too big.
Yeah, I don't like lifting because I get too big.
Right.
Too much tea.
Too much tea.
Too much tea. I get
of tea.
I get huge muscles very, really quickly, and I took martial arts like in wrestling, so I don't get beat up.
So don't fuck with Harry.
Do you have the American flag pants like on Napoleon Dynamite?
No, I did not have American
Rex
flag.
Rex Kwando?
No.
Rex Kwando.
did
you eat tater tots?
Yeah. But that's it was cool. It was interesting listening to last week's Wall episode when I was at the gym working out, because it was like hearing you guys' experience in Plainfield High School, that's like a completely different like high school experience than I ever had in public school.
You would have enjoyed Martinsville.
Yeah. The way you guys were like, you guys could do that in school, like I was treated like a freaking criminal.
Yeah.
Right. You know, everything was suspicious.
Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
and
that
we, and we had, you know, leeway of, well, like Bobby Bowden, they're good kids.
It's that way. It's that way in Plainfield now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that way
everyone
everywhere.
Is. Like that's 24/7 alert, you know. Yeah.
until they realized I could fix their computers for them, I was treated like a criminal. But up until they're like, wow, this guy knows what he's doing. He fixes our stuff. I was given like the ability to move around the school at my leisure.
Harry has that ability in life. Harry has the ability to just get into groups, and he's, you know, he can just easily maneuver.
He's a chameleon.
Yeah. Nobody, not a chameleon because Harry's Harry, but like nobody gives Harry shit. We don't really give Harry shit.
Well, then I get in trouble by his mom.
Yep.
Well,
you said the.
Yep.
We need to talk about this. Let's talk about the
race relations within the.
The race relations brought on by Obama have not. The erosion in the country has also mimicked the erosion between Harry and Greg. Greg
erosion.
Yeah.
Greg has made several very racist attacks on Harry lately. I'm going to be honest.
Off color.
Basically hate crimes.
Internet hate
I
crimes.
I color shamed
sure.
him.
You made a meme with Harry's face that said the N-word in it, and you put it on his Facebook wall.
It was a soft day.
And then you were surprised that
it never occurred to me that was offensive. I swear to God, because I don't think... I don't.
Are you fucking stupid?
Are you born in a Klan rally?
No, it's because I
have
don't...
Have you gone autistic?
It never occurred to me that was
social
offensive.
Social cues. Social norms.
He broke up with his last podcast partner because he called him the N-word.
But he meant it.
He meant it.
Do you think I meant it?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Do you think I was referring to your race?
You do say boy a lot, but... especially when we're playing golf. But
do you make
you
him
wear all white uniforms and ask to carry my bag? What the hell do you expect?
Do you make him get you mint juleps? That's not cool.
Oh.
No. I only drink bourbon.
Yeah. You put him in a top hat, and instead of m'lady, you said I'll let Harry say it.
I was copying the m'lady meme. Yeah, someone had made the meme m'lady. on Instagram, and that's and so it said
the first.
Let's stutter.
When I first saw it, it was I was at work. I was looking at my tablet. I saw it. I saw it real quick. I chuckled, but I thought it was in the chat, so I didn't think anything of it. I just kind of like closed my tablet and kept moving.
And I'm with you. And so I didn't think anything because I didn't realize because Joe gets in the chat and Joe's like a social justice warrior lately, and he's like, Greg, have you lost your fucking mind? And so I didn't think anything of it. And then I'm like scrolling through Facebook that evening, and I see it, and I see the meme, and I'm like, is this real life? Did this lose his mind?
It's the same. I would do no different calling you Canadian.
I know, but the first comment
different. You could, you know,
because that's a country. Hosers. The first comment is Harry's mother losing her fucking mind. She's like, "Oh hell no! Nobody owns my baby except my baby." He is not a... He is a man. Like, she started preaching on you, and it was fantastic. It was hilarious.
See, I didn't catch any of the Facebook.
I've always maintained the same thing, is that it would be racist if I had kept that to myself and Harry was never aware, because I think Harry couldn't handle it.
Correct.
Or you didn't want to say the name Luke Kuhn earlier on the episode because you're afraid it was offensive towards a similar-sounding term towards black people.
Can we just go back to the racist voice that Chris made about my mom?
Mm-hmm.
That
was an accurate impression, and don't you deny
it. My mom's from Boston. She doesn't sound like that.
Your mom sounds exactly like that.
My mom's from Boston.
And had I not impersonated her...
Born in Lynn, Massachusetts, Lynn, Massachusetts. She does not sound like that.
Listen here, Harry. Had I not impersonated her that way, I would have been racist.
Are you white-splaining right now?
Absolutely.
My mom has an accent from Boston.
Sounds
like, you know, like she's from Boston.
Your mom sounds like
I've listened
Ms.
to
Pat
Harry tell a story about going to Panera Bread and getting off, like, they didn't want to offer you watermelon salad.
Yes.
And you told that at Jeremiah's Christmas party, and everyone was afraid to laugh, and I'm like,
That's hilarious.
The racist people, because Harry's laugh, it's funny. No one cares that what color his skin is, and if he's not a snowflake.
I think we
don't have to walk around eggshells, because it never occurred to me Harry was different than I am.
We know that, and that's why we thought you put it in chat, because we know if you put it in chat, Harry will all laugh. But when you put it on his wall, that opens it up to like... everybody seeing it and everybody getting involved and Harry's mom sitting him down at brunch.
I apologize for making your life difficult.
Then I've got family members to apologize.
I don't apologize for treating you the same as I would anyone else.
Luckily, like,
you go on a tour?
Yeah, luckily, yeah.
Harry had to go
race apologist tour.
We have to, we have to have a Weird Libertarian's funeral for that word.
What word?
No. I'm not saying it. No, don't you look at me, Harry. No, he had
14 years. I still can't get Lacey to say it.
He was at not even in the bedroom.
No, she won't. Yeah, no, nope. She won't do it.
Greg would the first night.
I wouldn't say it with a hard R.
Costume. I got her.
I'm from Lynn, Massachusetts. We drop our A's.
You don't play Little Slave Girl in the bedroom.
We do, but you you know, she still won't say the word. It's okay.
You play reparations.
Why won't she say it?
You know, she was raised, you know, to not say that word.
Right.
She's a sweet girl.
Well, just like me. I don't like saying it either. I don't say it.
Yeah, I don't say it.
I don't say it. You know, it's...
Except for the meme that you put out.
That
on
wasn't
public,
it. They're two totally different things.
Public Facebook wall.
If they weren't different things, you would be able to... They can play one on the radio, but they can't play the other one.
No.
Yeah, it is all about attention. And the other reason, like, I'm almost a little bit desensitized by it because of the simple fact that I've been around libertarians for so long in, like, the quote-unquote brutalist movement, and that's the first thing they usually hit me with when I, like, walk into a group. Hey,
that's
guys.
What they call each other.
Right. Hey, guys. And yeah. I just, like, da-da-da-da.
So the fact that you think you haven't said it, and you've said it to me many times.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sitting there in the chat, and it's like, what's going on? Like, maybe they're all just black here in the chat room. And I just keep going at it. And the next thing, it took me a while to realize, oh, they're trying to be offensive.
They're trying to be edgy.
It's almost sad.
I just feel like it's racist to think I'm not going to do this because they can't handle it.
Well, Harry is really the one who kind of taught that to us. He's like, listen, you should treat me exactly the way, if Tad, we make fun of Tad's autism. It's wrong to make fun.
Where's
of.
That? Is it floating around here?
Oh, it's in full force.
No one screeched in
I
a while.
I was always told, A, you fly, ER, you die. That's what I was told growing up.
Johnny Cash didn't kill anybody in Reno, you know. It was for a song. For
I know.
Entertainment.
I know. I know Greg. I know that Greg loves Harry, and he was not trying to be offensive. I just couldn't believe he did it.
I honestly, it never occurred to me it was offensive at all. I was like, oh, I love memeing. I've made Harry a woman before. I made Michelle Obama the first meme I made of Harry.
This is the shit posting bubble he lives in.
She thought that one was funny.
Yeah.
She's racist. I will protect. I will respect your mom's glass jimmies in her from now on. So I don't want to make your life difficult.
And yet, you never posted the one of me where you made me Magic Johnson.
I posted that many times.
Yeah,
that's all over the place.
Yeah, how dare you?
I posted your school picture as a little black girl in Detroit. In fact, the first early like Photoshop I learned how to do.
In fact, I'm HIV positive that I've seen it several
times. Yeah, I've tagged you in it a bunch of times.
Where I'm basically in blackface.
I David Faraday, the PGA Tour golf announcer, I read an article he wrote. He used to have a column in Golf Magazine, and it was for Tiger Woods Tournament at Congressional Country Club, and it's for vets. Mm-hmm. And he wrote about how there's on the 18th tee, there's this guy that's quadriplegic. He has epilepsy, and he's got some mental problems, but they have him there to greet all the tour pros before they tee off. And he wrote an entire article talking about this bobbing little bastard, and like, and he explained himself because there was an outrage. He's like, I am not going to ever act like he's less than me or anyone else that served in the military, because I would be accepting that he can't handle it, and that immediately categorizes him as something different than myself.
Right.
Yes.
And so I took that to heart in high school. Mm-hmm. And then, we didn't grow up in a racist era.
Ever. No.
I went to an Nelly concert with Jeff McKinney, and I wore FUBU. And he was like, you can't wear that. And I was like, I have patent leather Air Force Ones, bro.
Tad showing off his Halloween costume.
Nice.
Yeah.
How'd you wear your spurs?
Uh-huh.
How'd you wear
saddle
your spurs?
Saddle up and put spurs underneath. I got gum bottoms.
You've seen that.
You couldn't make Blazing Saddles and release it as a movie today.
Not even close.
Because of the outrage, but I don't.
If a black director did it, there was a cross-dressing black guy in it too, maybe.
Well, see,
if it was that farcical, but to the extreme,
the Madea movies.
But I don't blame Obama for any of this, because Obama seems to be fairly level-headed about all this kind of stuff and going, "Listen, everybody just needs to settle down." It's always the white people that are offended for Harry,
right?
You know what I mean? It's always the white people
like
that
trying to change how a last name's pronounced.
Yeah.
Literal.
Coon?
Listen, I care about Harry, and I don't want him to be offended.
Yeah.
But we are all so proud of your protection of Harry the Snowflake.
Yeah.
Well, he has control of my internet. I'm not going to piss him off.
That's actually a really good point. It's a little bit different.
I'm not an idiot.
Yeah. But like, yeah. Also, the jokes aside, yeah. Yes, the word is quote unquote offensive. You really should use it in polite company, but it's just a freaking word.
Nothing polite about this company.
Yeah, it's just a word. Have Steel Jimmies, get over it. And yes, has someone called you that? Then you probably shouldn't hang out with them. If you really don't like the word and someone using it, don't hang out with them. But yeah. Of course, you really can't take that stance. And so, like, the black community, stop it. I don't care if it's like, well, this is what it's like. We'll stop using it then. I could pull up a Little John song right now, and it says it about over 200 times in the first 2 minutes of the song.
Mm-hmm.
I still listen to the song. I like the song. I think it's pretty cool, but I like the edited version out. You know, but sorry, that's a little off topic. But
no, but I mean, like N.W.A. that was basically like screeching nails on a chalkboard to a lot of American society the first time their album came out, and it hit mainstream because of their use of the word.
Right,
straight out of Compton, crazy ass. Never mind. So that was it Tipper?
Tipper Gore.
Tipper. Yeah. Sure was. Yep.
Tipper. Parental advisory.
Yeah, so, Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit had it on it.
So yeah. I think that is, so let's get into the list of that's certainly the racial legacy of Barack Obama.
And you started out summit. Fearing him, or you were captivated by his abilities.
I was captivated, and then about a month later I saw Ron, I was like, I can't. I spent about 20 days thinking it over with Obama, and I was just like, I just can't. And I saw Hillary Clinton a couple weeks after him, and I was like, no contest. And then I saw Ron Paul on the debate, and I was just like, oh, that's where I fit. That's where I belong. I'm a libertarian. But I've never disliked Obama. I think he's a fairly level-headed person. I think that he is an idealistic person. I disagree with his idealism and his policies. I do think that he is a socialist and a communist and all that other stuff.
Do you still?
Yeah.
Man, I don't at all.
Man, I think that I think in his heart, like if you and I were running for, like, to a communist or a socialist, libertarians are the worst things on the planet, okay? But if you and I were running for president, we'd have to be like Donald Trump or Rand Paul and be...
So any non-leftist has to be like that now.
Sure.
You have to be so combative and an so patriotic, star-spangled... Right. You know, red, white, and blue to even have a shot.
So
You'll never survive the, you know, what's the pit you run where you just get hit by all the gauntlet. You'll never survive the gauntlet of politics being anything other than just an obscene, unapologetic bully.
Yeah.
And libertarians have to understand that's our reality.
And he's not a bully. I mean, he's just a very thoughtful person. And I think he has much more radical beliefs inside of him than he allows out or in the policy. I think he will go down as sort of a technocratic president in some ways. I don't think that he, you know, the healthcare thing was, he wasn't very good at guiding his policies. He's too much of an ivory tower thinker. So I don't think that he was able to really guide. I think you're going to see with Donald Trump, somebody who is very involved in the process of making deals with Congress, where that was not Barack Obama. That is not something that he
was
good
intent.
At. It was his intent, but it's just not... By the second term, he was just like, I'm leaving this to Biden. I'm just not good at this stuff. So I think that Barack Obama is somebody who most of America at the beginning of the term, I think that a good portion of people were afraid of him because they didn't know his true intentions. And I think at the end of it, we look at it and go, yeah, I'm poor. And I'm not richer than I was 8 years ago, and I'm not happier than I was 8 years ago, and my insurance is all fucked up more than it was 8 years ago. But I like the dude.
Personally, I think he's wonderful.
And I wouldn't have said that 8 years ago.
Really?
I was like most libertarians. I bought into all of the conspiracy theories and the terrorism of, you know, the terrified notions that we're all going to be in FEMA camps and he's going to take the NSA stuff and just triple it. And
he still got one day left.
He did triple it.
Yeah.
He did. Well, he absolutely did. But it also, at the same time, had the effect of that. While that's not good, it isn't me in a FEMA camp for having a libertarian podcast. You know, and I think that we thought he
was more conditioned.
He was going to be a tyrannical president, a radical president, and he's not been that. He's been a very Washington elite president.
You know? Yeah, what was such a benefit to him winning was that he could be whoever you wanted him to be.
Yeah.
He abstained almost overwhelmingly on his voting record, mm-hmm. so you couldn't pin him on many things.
Right.
But if you remember the primary with Hillary Clinton and John Edwards, John Edwards was the most conservative Democrat. He was the Jim Webb type, you know, Democrat. Luckily, he didn't win it. Otherwise, his affair would have come out. But Barack Obama was the one on his health care plan. There was no public option. And so he ran to the right of Hillary.
Right.
He also was the one championing the ending of CIA dark sites in Abu Ghraib and the torture policies of Bush. Those were the two big selling points of Barack Obama. Is he was the more moderate liberal. He was the better speaker and communicator. He's definitely more thoughtful because of, you know, he spent a lot of his undergraduate years were spent studying political philosophy. And David Brooks wrote about early on during the campaign how captivated he was by President Obama because of his knowledge on, you know, so many different philosophers from Locke to Rousseau to Marx. He could go in and out of all the different philosophies. And his ability to know the conservative argument as well as the, you know, the liberal argument. And I mean, I didn't so much have any of the fear about the FEMA camp because of the Abu Ghraib stance. Which is why he sort of shocked me with his amping up of the drones.
Right.
And then his complete failure of curtailing the surveillance state and even allowing its growth to a massive, almost, I don't know that you could pull it back now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that the surveillance apparatus could be legislatively scaled back. You know, correct. There are other ways, but, you know, legislatively, I don't know that you could.
Correct. And most of the people, like, they know, they see it happening, but they refuse to lift a finger and do anything about it.
Yeah.
And they don't even pick candidates who care about it.
Right. And then Barack Obama, you know, a lot of his overwhelming, he was just the more optimistic visionary. You know, when he spoke, he presented a vision, he captivated audiences because he was not, you know, he attacked Bush for the financial crisis, which he was right to do. You know, even though that goes back further, but the handling of the financial crisis by George W. Bush left a vacuum in leadership. If you remember, John McCain suspended his campaign to talk about going and trying to figure it out. John McCain knows less about economics than arguably any liberal. And so Barack Obama, I thought he won the campaign when he inserted himself into the discussion on the financial crisis and took the lead on the stimulus program.
Right.
And presented such, and it was easy for him to talk about government intervention because he's a liberal. John McCain goes in and starts talking about nationalizing auto car dealerships. He's the biggest hypocrite on the planet, and his campaign's over regardless. And so, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. he had no option to take a lead role, even if he could have, which he couldn't because he only knows foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, Mitt Romney would have been able to do it probably pretty well, but John McCain couldn't. But I was never scared by Barack Obama. I liked the way he presented. I liked his intelligence and his thoughtfulness because he has a really good temperament.
Yeah,
like was said about FDR. You know, the only thing I didn't like were some of the more radical Marxist, the people in his hit, like Bill Ayers, potentially authoring or he did author. You know, ghost author Dreams of My Father from Weather Underground and some of the more radical elements of his past, but. Mm-hmm. Once he got in D.C., it was pretty clear this was a welfare liberal, a social Democrat, not unlike Bernie Sanders, that had an unwavering belief in his personal ability to get opposing sides in a room, preach rationality, build consensus and compromise, and then go out and present it to the public. And he just encountered a worldview he was not even remotely ready for.
Right. Yep. Not even remotely prepared.
I mean, that isn't how Washington works. You can't budge people off their perch by rationality.
Mm-hmm. You got to give him something. He wasn't wanting to give up. And
Biden's the one that had currency. You know?
He didn't have anything. He wasn't in the Senate that long. Mm-mm. He's only in there, one?
He didn't even finish his term.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he didn't finish.
Yeah, I mean, and he'd only been in the Illinois, you know, he hadn't even been in Illinois legislature that long because this is a guy that had student loans when he became president.
Yeah, so most people just saw him like this lucky upstart.
Right. I mean, and he got criticism for like never having authoring any research at University of Chicago as a lecturer, but it was way too early in his career to mm-hmm. have published something prominent there. Right. You know, this is one of the best law schools in the country. He wasn't going to come in over these towering minds and just do it. Those the people that would have are usually like eccentrics that you leave them hold up. Barack Obama's social skills are incredible.
So let's go through. You put together a nice little list, and let's talk about the good and the bad of Obama. Let's start with the good. I will read the list, and then you guys chime in with commentary when you feel so moved. So the good parts of Barack Obama's presidency over these last 8 years, as a list compiled by GT Lens. Gregory Thomas.
Tad.
Gregory Tad.
I changed it to Tad. I went to the courthouse and legally changed it to Tad. Gregory Tad Western Lens.
He joined the ranch.
I added a junior, if you don't mind.
More than welcome.
Barack Obama ended the war in Iraq. He ordered all U.S. military forces out of the country. The last troops left on December 18, 2011. Don't we still have like 10,000 troops there or something?
Yeah, as advisors. They're not on the ground in an actual fighting capacity.
Gotcha.
And it wasn't like we didn't leave because it was like, oh, okay, it's time to leave. We got kicked out.
And then that was the plan, too. That was included in the initial plan. Right. So he fulfilled the Bush plan in Iraq.
Correct.
He eliminated Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way that you phrase it.
8 times.
He allegedly... Yeah. Eliminated.
He died in 2000.
According to Alex Jones, we never saw the body. He could still be alive. We don't know.
Because it's just like that was the 8th report of someone killing him, and you know there was a lot of reports that he was on a dialysis machine. So
he was on dialysis.
Yeah,
so, a 6'6" Muslim on dialysis
in a cave.
Right.
Well, in a mansion in Pakistan.
Yeah. Well,
mansion.
Well,
he was hopping. Remember,
Pakistan. That was
we were bombing the shit out of those caves.
Yeah. Close.
You know, so he's got to have his dialysis machine, and if he's really on the run, it's really kind of hard to easy to find someone who's that tall and on dialysis who can afford who can afford in the dialysis treatment.
Now, Greg has this on the good list. It said, repeal, don't ask, don't tell.
I think that is good.
I know, I do too. I'm just kidding.
That's a good thing.
I'm not for the LGBT barbecue like that.
And ended
it'd be fun.
Ended the 1990 era's restriction and formalized new policy allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly in the military for the first time.
But who put in don't ask, don't tell again?
Bill Clinton.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Reversed Bush torture policies. Tad thinks this is bad, but you've got it on the good list, and I agree. He reversed Bush torture policies 2 days after taking office, nullified Bush-era rulings that had allowed detainees in U.S. custody to undergo certain enhanced interrogation techniques.
If they're not Americans and they weren't born under this Constitution, they need to be...
These techniques were considered inhumane under the Geneva Conventions.
All they did was twist their titties a little bit.
And that was the legal justification, is people under the Geneva Convention are protected. They are typically one-man operating centers in terrorist groups, so that was the legal... They operate outside Geneva since they're not part of a nation state.
Beneath their Constitution.
Does the Geneva Convention specifically cover titty twisters?
Yeah, can anyone tell me?
I think we should find out.
What's the guy's name? I'm still waiting on Hannity to be waterboarded. Damn it!
That's true. He never fulfilled that promise.
Oh, yeah. Didn't we meet the whistleblower?
We did at the Liberty Tour event in Bloomington.
Oh, yep. John Coon. John
starts with a K.
Yeah, something. Kill a cow and Ellis.
Brian Kill.
Also released the secret Bush legal ruling supporting the use of these techniques.
Yeah, it was a secret legislative decision, legal opinion. So that's what a lot of the criticism was.
Talking about the kangaroo courts that they can just say whatever the hell they want and pretty much.
I don't call
light to do anything.
I don't call them kangaroo courts. I call them tad courts.
Yeah, whatever.
Anything goes. Achieved New START Treaty, signed with Russia 2010, and won ratification in Congress 2011 of treaty that limits each country to 1,500 strategic warheads, down from 2,200, and 700 launchers down from more than 1,400 and reestablished and strengthened a monitoring and transparency program that had lapsed in 2009 through which each country can monitor the other. And in my opinion, I think that his desire to lessen nuclear weapons will be one of his major pet projects post-presidency.
Oh, I 100% agree. Yeah. Him and, you know, that was something before Richard Luger got voted out of office, they were passionate working on.
So what do they do with the warhead if they take it off the jack engine rocket?
Sell them to libertarians.
Yeah, so they sell them to Mark Edge and Ian Freeman over in New Hampshire.
They'll all be in New Hampshire.
Yep. Passed Fair Sentencing Act, signed 2010 legislation that reduces sentencing disparity between crack versus powder cocaine possession from 100 to 1 to 18 to 1.
Yeah, because it's basically institutional racism within legal sentencing.
Absolutely. Began post 9/11 military build down. Why did you put post? Was that a typo?
It was a typo, sorry.
I didn't know if that was a phrase. I was unfamiliar. Began post-9/11 military build-down. After winning agreement from congressional Republicans and Democrats in summer 2011, budget deal to reduce projected defense spending by $450 billion, proposed new DOD budget this year with cuts the size of a new national defense strategy that would shrink ground forces from 570,000 to 490,000 over the next 10 years, while increasing programs in intelligence gathering and cyber warfare. Now, this seems like something that Donald Trump is going to probably... Do you think that he'll reverse this?
Donald Trump... Yeah, no, I think he'll maintain this. It's going to be basically just a restructuring of the military. The way our military is built right now isn't effective for fighting any type of battle we could be lured into.
Yeah.
So there needs to be... You know, cyber intelligence, cyber warfare is the future. And then he's going to really focus on the Navy because there is no one even close to our fleet. And that's something that can create a ton of jobs. You know, a lot of the shipbuilding centers in the United States, Baltimore, Boston, those areas, Seattle, have been dead for a while because there hasn't been the authorization of a new carrier.
Yeah.
And you can employ 100,000 people over a course of 3-4 years building a naval carrier.
Now, here's the thing about the military spending, and I think both Trump and Obama would agree with the idea of restructuring our military and scaling it down and, you know, being smarter. I mean, Trump talks all the time about restructuring the deal for F-18s, but the problem are the congressmen, the people who control the purse, and they don't want to... they don't want to be the ones that lose jobs in their district by killing a Boeing contract, for instance, in Washington that employs people on an F-18, even though we don't need the F-18.
Luckily, he's enough of a bullet. Like, look what he did with Boeing with Air Force One.
He'll get it done himself.
Yeah.
He gives them the political coverage they've never had, and he can take the heat rather than them, and he can get their vote. That's one of the advantages to his messaging ability.
Oh, yeah, put the blame on him. Mm-hmm. I did it this year. I beat you up. I made you to make the decision.
And he can shitpost his way into a modernized military that is scaled back on ground troops and you know, and really nation. It's set up for nation building right now.
Yeah,
and that is just needs to be abandoned. So anything that can take us from less of a nation building setup to more of imposing our power through the Navy, through the seas, I support. Because it's better than putting troops on the ground. Is it good from a libertarian perspective? It's not ideal. But I'll take that over anything that limits our ability to be an imperial power, I support.
Absolutely. Crackdown on bad for-profit colleges in an effort to fight predatory practices of some for-profit colleges.
Almost all.
Like ITT Tech, what are some
Phoenix, of Phoenix, Strayer University, Trump, DeVry. They take people Trump who can't University. Get admitted to the, or don't go to the community colleges, which would be better.
Right.
And they max them out on student loans.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, the problem was the repayment was so low. Mm-hmm. It's what's happening right now. Yeah. I don't know if you saw today, the government just got caught lying about loan Navian. Repayment rates.
Mm-hmm. Purposely lying. Navian got fucked.
Yeah. Because I keep getting new texts from my computer career, resumes at my desk. Oh my god! So every time I bring them into the office to do their interviews,
they're terrible.
They're awful. They're all awful. You know, or you'll find and the one couple of gems that'll be there, it'll be this guy who had nothing else. He wasn't a tech his entire life. Failure to launch kind of guy. The kind of guy that was like sitting in his mom's basement with nothing to do, and their parents forced him to go there. But he already knew tech.
Right.
Yeah, so it was basically just a credential for him to get him in the room.
Correct. But he could have did the
same. That's one in a million.
Yeah, but he could have did the same thing and went to WGU or just Ivy Tech and actually got a good degree.
And have way less debt.
Right.
So he set up rules to cut those people out, created recovery.gov, a website run by independent board of inspectors generals looking for fraud and abuse, and stimulus spending provides public with detailed information on every contract funded by the $787 billion American Recovery and Reinvestment.
And the only reason I say that's good is that's, in today's era, that level of transparency should be the de facto standard.
Absolutely.
You know, you paper should trail. Have any, we should be able to log into a website, see how every nickel is spent, who voted for it, you know, in a detailed breakdown that's easy to understand.
But that's the idea. That website is not as awesome as the
no, but I mean, it's a good, website? It's a, I think it's, that's something that is government run that I think would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a step, but it's not. It's not very intuitive. It's not fairly good, easy website to navigate.
No, but I mean, it is transparency that would have never existed before.
Yeah, and it can grow upon. Yeah, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah,
expanded stem cell research in 2009 eliminated the Bush era restrictions on embryonic stem cell research, which shows promise in treating special spinal injuries among many other areas.
Which is huge for people like with ALS and that type of thing.
Which is really cool. Like the hospital actually offered, like, because I'm going through the whole pregnancy thing, they kept saying, like, they can hold the stem cell of the umbilical cord at the hospital for the kids now.
I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. Harry's not even showing. Provided payment to wrong minority farmers, Harry. In 2009, signed the Claims Resolution Act, which provided $4.6 billion in funding for a legal settlement with Black and Native Americans, Harry, mm-hmm. Greg, farmers who the government cheated out of loans and natural resource royalties in years past. So he did get reparations passed.
Or because they already provided said royalties to whites.
Ah, right. Okay.
That's the justification for the bill.
That's fucked up. I never even heard
they
that.
Couldn't afford the attorney fees to battle it in court.
Oh, wow. That's great. Mm-hmm. I like that. Killed the F-22 in 2009.
This should have been the bad category. I love that play.
Well, you love the plane, but that doesn't mean we need it, Harry. I sound like
where
your wife all
fly
sudden.
Around in.
Harry, we don't need the F-22.
Harry's ideal NCAP government would have government-funded fighter jets and Central Intelligence.
CIA research on computer
they'd
shit.
They'd have DARPA and jets.
Everybody build your own plane.
Yeah.
In 2009, ended further purchases of the Lockheed. I'm sorry, I'm going to heck you. I can't help it. Purchases of Lockheed Martin single seat twin engine fighter aircraft, which cost $358 million apiece. Though the military had 187 built, the plane had never flown a single combat mission, eliminating it, save $4 billion.
On maintenance and ongoing costs for something that was never flown.
So this is one that just came about, and it was the Chelsea Manning commutation.
Woo!
She was going to get 35 years, and she'll be out in May.
President Trump takes over tomorrow, so we'll go back to setting our brains to two genders now. Oh. Thank you.
Okay. Thank all right, Belinda.
Right. That's, she. Is that Z, Z, or Dragon?
Yeah. It's one of the two.
Yeah. So she picked one.
Then Bradley Manning was a...
Chelsea Manning.
Now Chelsea Manning.
Why use a dead name? Why be offensive to a hero?
Because it's called context, Harry. People may not understand who Chelsea Manning is, but they may have heard the name Bradley Manning, so we need to make sure that they understand the story.
Just say Private Manning, then.
People aren't going to understand Private Manning.
But too bad. It's a dead name.
Yeah, and it's too close to Peyton Manning. They'll be like, where's my Papa John's pizza?
Apparently, we can't even like say Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
The guy that freed the slaves. It's only a context you're allowed to refer to him as because it's a dead name.
Allegedly.
So Chelsea Manning leaked, Bradley Manning, just to piss Harry off, leaked information to WikiLeaks. And this is really sort of the biggest piece. This is sort of the big WikiLeaks. This is what really... poured gas on the fire.
It was like
WikiLeaks.
Their Lewinsky moment for Drudge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And here's some of the things that we know because of what Bradley Manning leaked. Chelsea Manning. I'm sensitive to it, you know.
Yeah, awful sensitive.
And that we know because of Private Manning, and WikiLeaks. Yemeni president lied to his own people, claiming his military carried out airstrikes on militants actually done by the U.S., all part of giving U.S. full rein in a country against terrorists. Details on Vatican hiding sex, hiding big sex abuse cases in Ireland. U.S. tried to get Spain to curb its probes of Gitmo torture and rendition. Egyptian torturers trained by FBI, although allegedly to teach the human rights issue, State Department memo, U.S.-backed 2009 coup in Honduras was illegal and unconstitutional. Cables on Tunisia appear to help spark the revolt in that country. The country's ruling elite described as, quote-unquote, the family, with mafia-like skimming throughout the economy. The country's first lady may have had massive profits off of a private school. The U.S. knew all about massive corruption in Tunisia back in 2006, but went on supporting the government anyway, making it the pillar of its North African policy. Cable shown the U.K. promised in 2009 to protect U.S. interest in the official Chilicot inquiry on the start of the Iraq War. The oil giant Shell claims to have inserted staff and fully infiltrated Nigeria's government. The U.S. pressured the European Union to accept GM, genetic modification, that is. Washington was misled by her own diplomats on Russia-Georgia showdown. If you remember, it was reported that we had that Russia had invaded Georgia, but that actually had never happened. Extremely important historical document finally released in full. Ambassador April Glaspie's cable from Iraq in 1990 on meeting with Saddam Hussein before Kuwait invasion. The UK sidestepped a ban on housing cluster bombs. The New York Times, from hundreds of diplomatic cables, Afghanistan emerges a looking glass land where bribery, extortion, and embezzlement are the norm, and the honest man is the distinct outlier. We knew the Afghan president, vice president, left the country with $52 million in cash. Shocking levels of U.S. spying at the United Nations. Potential environmental disaster kept secret by the U.S. when a large consignment of highly enriched uranium in Libya came close to cracking open and leaking radioactive material into the atmosphere. The U.S. used threats, spying, and more to get away with its last year's crucial climate conference in Copenhagen. And it just so we're almost done here. America,
well, yeah, with the climate thing going on, and like New York is underwater in liberal tears right now.
That's right. So awesome. Yes.
So salty.
American and British diplomats fear Pakistan nuclear weapons with poor security could lead to fissile material falling into the hands of terrorists with a devastating nuclear exchange with India. Hundreds of cables detail U.S. diplomats as sales agents, more than previously thought, centering on jet rivalry of Boeing versus Airbus, hints of corruption and bribes. Million in U.S. military aid for fighting Pakistani insurgents went to other government uses or stolen. Israel wanted to bring Gaza to the brink of collapse. The U.S. Secret Service used Turkey as a base to transport terrorism suspects as part of its extraordinary rendition program. As protests spread in Egypt, cables revealed that strongman Suleiman was at the center of the government's torture programs, causing severe backlash for Mubarak after he named Suleiman vice president during the revolt. Other cables revealed or confirmed widespread Mubarak regime corruption, police abuses and torture, and claims of massive Mubarak family fortune, significantly influencing media coverage and U.S. response. So this is from The Nation. In an article of August 23rd, 2013, by Greg Mitchell. If you want to look it up, you can Google a long list of what we know thanks to Private Manning. So that is barely half the article that I just read, and that was a comprehensive amount of things that we know.
The big thing was that we were spying on our allies so intently,
right?
You know, people like Germany and New Zealand, and, right? You know, end of it.
Merkel.
Yeah,
Germany.
You know, we're collecting the discussions on New Zealand office space.
It's called Cablegate, and it was hugely embarrassing for the United States. And that's what it was. That's really what it came down to, is that it was embarrassing for the United States, and they do what they always did. They're doing it now with James O'Keefe and Project Veritas, as we discussed in our last episode. They don't ever discuss what was in the leaked cables. They don't ever discuss the Panama Papers. They don't ever discuss Hillary Clinton's email exchanges with Podesta. they discuss the appropriateness of us knowing that information.
Mm-hmm. And whose lives are at risk right. by revealing such things.
And mm-hmm. nobody's life. And that was the back then, because we covered this when it leaked out. And back then it was like, well, I mean, at the time we were conflicted, like, man, we don't want anybody to get hurt because of this leaking, because this was the first major leak. Snowden hadn't happened yet. Snowden wouldn't happen.
He was still getting everything in place to
exactly.
do his reveal.
And wasn't it part of Manning's treatment that that was one of the motivators for him to do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so
that's why he tried to go through traditional back channels,
right?
Or you know, the actual whistleblowing process.
But he saw what happened to Private Manning, and he said,
"No way,
no way. Listen, this isn't gonna work. They're not gonna pay attention to me. It's gonna get buried. Nobody's gonna cover it. They're just gonna cover over whether or not I should have done it." And the American press, and this is why the American press is damn near treasonous. They don't ever cover what our nation is doing wrong, our mm-hmm. government is doing wrong. They cover whether or not we should have transparency, but then they're the first people to scream about transparency when Donald Trump takes the oath of office tomorrow.
Or, yeah, revealing his, you know, the big thing right now is investigating any debt his companies or real estate projects have taken on from foreign governments and whether that debt can be exploited as influence.
Right.
You know, like that's he's not going to be involved in day-to-day operations.
Right.
It might influence the people at Trump Organization, you know, there, but he isn't allowed to control it mm-hmm. through his, you know, as president.
So this is obviously something that was good. It wasn't a total pardon, but it was a commutation of the sentence. So right. She will be out in May.
May, yeah.
And instead of 2024, I think it was. And
a long ass time,
a long, yeah. long time. And, I would love to see tonight about midnight in about an hour and a half, a signing statement saying any and all charges, pertaining to Edward Snowden are cleared, but I don't think we'll see that.
No, we won't see that. That just won't happen. He just got extended, he gets to stay an additional 3-year term in Russia, and
good.
Then he's eligible to become a Russian citizen by going through this process,
good.
Which will probably be his long term fate.
Yeah.
But Julian Assange actually said that he would be allowed himself to be extradited to the United States if the president offered gave him pardoned him or commuted the sentence.
But what has he done wrong? What would be the charges for Assange?
Oh, he's got a million charges. He's got charges in London. The Swedish charges got dropped because they were fraudulent.
Right, the rape charges.
Uh-huh. But it would be leaking declassified. Same thing as Manning, mm-hmm. only on a way more massive scale.
Right.
Well, I hope he doesn't. I don't know why he would say something so stupid. He shouldn't.
He's been in the Peru embassy or Ecuadorian embassy.
Ecuadorian embassy. Yeah, but yeah.
Hasn't seen sunlight. I mean, that'll make you do weird things.
Right.
I guess.
They've cut his interconnection a lot of different times. And
right around the election.
And he must have said something like, because the likelihood of that happening, that was totally out of left field. No one really, people wanted that, but they didn't know they were actually going to get it.
He said if Manning got pardoned, and she didn't.
Right.
Exactly. No, but he said he would abide by the offer. The Sun reported today. The UK Sun.
It came out today that he was.
He will stand by. He's willing to be extradited because of.
But what's the point? Well, I mean, we need his voice.
The climate in America. It's changed. I mean, people don't see Julian Assange as a treasonous actor to the United States.
So he thinks that he'd be able to get a fair trial.
And
now.
He thinks Trump would give him.
And he thinks that it would give. It would become a total circus, and everything that he'd become an international discussion.
Correct. Yeah, and it will also spark people talking about it again. Most people kind of forgot about him.
Yeah.
And WikiLeaks. So just let everyone know, like, hey, if they're still out there, this is what happened, and this is why I'm in my situation.
And he's already in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Technically, yeah.
Pretty much.
A U.S., you know, high security. Look at the people at Guantanamo. They get to swim in the ocean and get ice cream.
Yeah.
And you know, like, if you know, for all intents and purposes, if the life. I mean, he doesn't get to talk to anybody. But yes, people can still go visit him, mm-hmm. but as long as it's allowed.
Correct.
But that same thing happens in high, you know, in the low security. He'd be in a low security prison because he's no actual threat.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Or who knows, or what would happen to him when he does go to trial. Mm-hmm. The other thing with, with Snowden, the problem with him is that he actually is the person that really gave concrete legitimacy to Alex Jones. He's been preaching about the government was spying on everything.
Surveillance,
you know, this massive surveillance, which makes you think like, well, look at this guy. This guy's looting conspiracy theories. And then Snowden proves him correct.
And I think to an extent, I mean, you look at the there is a non-hostile relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. And Putin has been, you know, offered him an existence and the ability to work in Russia and provide for himself and everything. Mm-hmm. And I really, I thought Trump has really tough rhetoric on
lawbreakers.
Yeah, on lawbreakers, on criminals. Right. But at the end of the day, the fact that he has brought Andrew Napolitano in through the second round of vetting for Supreme Court justices, I think he's going to be radically different on this type of thing, this type of whistleblowing. And yeah. I don't think Trump sees Edward Snowden as someone that is a threat in any way to the United States.
Right, yeah. And the other thing that a lot of people don't understand, like a lot of people are like, well, he went to Russia. He did not want to go to Russia. That's not what that
no
was.
No one wants to go to Russia.
Yeah, no one wants to go to Russia.
Except Donald Trump. Yeah.
But and he's stuck in Russia. The United States revoked his passport. He cannot leave. So his only hope is becoming a Russian citizen so he can travel around the globe. Well, can't even then, and that he's still wanted by the United States.
All right, so let's get into the bad of the Obama administration. The good was a little thin, but the bad, a lot of bad. The first is the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare.
The ACA.
I mean, do we really need to get into it? I mean, do we really need to explain why it's bad?
No. I mean, a lot of people will say it's good because it gives the guarantee to a lot of people that were unable to get it through the denial of pre-existing conditions.
How's it working out for you, Aaron?
Not very well. I'm too poor to afford health care now, and apparently too rich to qualify
for a subsidy.
For affordable health care. So my health care went from around $749 a month to a little over $1,400 for me and my wife and my two kids, and that was for the best package we could possibly find. So we're stuck without health care. Paying for our medical bills out of pocket and paying the huge fine at the end of the year. So thanks a lot, Obama.
Yeah. Yep. And I think there are a lot of people in your position.
Yeah, because I'm young and healthy, and I don't need all the things that they're forced to cover now, and that's what the justification for charging more is, that we cover so much more.
And that's the thing, is it the problem with it was there are ways to do healthcare in a totalitarian way through single payer where you can really manage costs through the absolute blunt force of government refusing to cover things. Mm-hmm. And then you can bend the cost curve down. And there are ways of doing it where it's all privatized and deregulated entirely and you get way less expenditure on things. And then there's the way we chose to do it, which is the worst of both.
Right.
Yep. All the Mexicans at just my job, they just pay the fine and travel back to Mexico, get all their health care done there, and fly back. And it's still cheaper.
Right.
Yeah, medical tourism, it really created a boutique industry around it.
$1,410. That is a trip to Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah I'll gladly go.
Yeah, he could get a Groupon for medical tourism for cheaper. But, I mean, that's the thing is that was the worst thing about it is this is a thoughtful guy who spent time in the weeds on policy, and yet because this was the only politically available route, thinking that in the long run he could get single payer.
From the beginning.
Well, right. Yeah, it was designed to fail so that single
so
payer was never.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
He never would have thought
my company
would be possible for repeal.
Right. My company has, you know, our insurance has increased 10% every year since the laws passed. And it just keeps, it's designed to keep raising costs on small business owners. So then eventually they push us out into the exchange and then that lowers the cost of the exchange. But the fact is like
it's not feasible.
It's not feasible. And so it was based on the Massachusetts law, and the Massachusetts law has had to have bailouts from the federal government. It's been $2 billion on the whole until Obamacare was passed. Insurance coverage, 98% of the people in Massachusetts were covered by health insurance. So if that's your goal of did the Massachusetts law work, then yes, it worked.
If that's the metric.
Coverage doesn't mean shit.
But it also skyrocketed costs.
Can they afford it without going to jail?
Exactly. And so the same thing is happening now with that. It's if only people had listened to this program before. Yeah. It's a huge failure, and you know,
from a fiscal perspective, from the actual point, which is to get care to people that need it, it fails. And any time you commit economic harm, and hurt the economy, and you consider it a short-term trade-off in order to get this outcome.
Yeah.
What ends up happening is, I mean, you have almost, you've guaranteed your fate. You yep. seal your yep. fate. With adding the medical device tax drove different divisions of Roche and DuPont or Dupuy up in Warsaw.
DuPont and Cook.
Cook Medical Devices. I mean, it really had an effect that wasn't seen by a lot of people, but it took time to materialize, and it is materializing. For anyone that wasn't basically already a member of the working poor, like someone making below, say, $14 an hour, but what happened to those people is they all got moved to under 30 hours a week.
Yep.
So they didn't get coverage anyway.
Right.
They still had to go through the exchange.
Mm-hmm.
It really just didn't accomplish anything because even though it was politically achievable, the only reason it was because it wouldn't produce any type of outcome that was good.
But here's the problem with trying to craft solution like Obama can sit down and write a law.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And then he can give it to the Democrats. But then by the time they get to the slaughter rule, if you remember that, and, you know, what is it, Demon Pass?
Mm-hmm.
Once you get to all that stuff, it's so full of bullshit from Republicans and Democrats in both chambers that the law, you've got to pass it to see what's in it. It's just so convoluted to get it passed with the reconciliation.
And this is with supermajorities in both houses.
Yeah.
That's what's funny is not like Republicans screwed this thing over. They didn't even need them.
Right.
Right.
And so they ended up doing it. And so that shows you it's the lobbyists that carved this thing up, turned it into the turd it is.
Right.
Yeah. Because everyone knew bad ideas come out of Boston. That healthcare plan, that's not the first $2 billion hole in Boston. They did try to dig underneath the ocean.
The big dig.
Yeah, they did dig underneath the ocean. They're still digging and still leaking.
Yeah, they're not the thought leader to look to when crafting a policy.
Yeah. Maybe hole digging, yeah, but
I had to turn to Amazon to buy a testosterone test yesterday.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I was talking to our HR director, and I was complaining about the price of the of healthcare, because I'm looking putting the kid on. I'm like, holy, why is it so much for a freaking kid? But the other thing with it, she kept laughing at me like, it's good.
Well, kids shouldn't be a medical condition. That should be something people pay for individually.
Well, the thing is,
that's not healthcare.
Tad and I consider them STDs.
Well, that's the thing is, that's the reason with America's problem.
But
we consider general care insurance. We don't know that you're going to have a baby. Why should insurance cover a known event?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not insurance.
Yeah. I paid for Carter out of pocket before he was born. It was over $16,000, and I was 20.
And the reason why is because of all the unpaid claims. Like, if people actually paid for health services, they knowingly, they can predict that are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I told them I didn't have insurance, and they said you have to have it paid for by the day he's born.
Yep.
I think
or we
people
administer services.
I was what are they going to do?
So Becky, we're water birthing.
Yep.
I think people would take better care of themselves. I mean, it's like, because maintenance isn't on your car insurance, you take better care of your car.
The reason car insurance is cheap is because it's accident based.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not, I need this medication. I know I'm going to hit a stop sign every month. So and then complain that the price is so high.
All right.
Can't get coverage.
Yeah.
I said we didn't need to cover this, but we covered it. Let's move on to the Arab Spring. Now this to me, you blame Obama for this? I really don't feel like that's something you can blame Obama for. The Arab Spring, it seemed like it was already boiling under the surface.
Overthrowing
handling, yes. The handling, yes.
I still contend the Arab Spring was entirely an economic phenomenon.
Right.
By the financial crisis and then having the Federal Reserve triple the U.S. money supply when all those countries' currencies are pegged to ours.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they're able to maintain control is they offer food and oil subsidies so people can drive to work and people can buy food. And so what happened is all the currency they have all of a sudden wouldn't cover the subsidies.
Right.
The government didn't have enough incoming revenue to boost the subsidy to maintain power, and you just had massive social revolt with the Tunisian vendor.
Right.
Why did he light himself on fire? The government was taking to try to fund the subsidies for the populace to maintain social risk.
A police officer literally came over and just took food off of his cart, and he said, I've had enough of this. People take, and I can't take it anymore, and he lit himself on fire in protest.
And the reason he was ordered to go and do that was because the government couldn't collect revenues fast enough because of the inflation of the currency, because it was pegged to the U.S. dollar.
Mm.
And so it created massive social upheaval, where if they had been able to let their currencies, adjust and have, variable rate, flexible rate, then this would have never, that phenomenon would have never happened. So I very much blame the president for not considering that impact.
Absolutely. Okay.
And not having that discussion with Ben Bernanke.
So supporting the overthrow of a democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood president in Egypt.
Yeah.
Which time?
Yeah.
The first, I mean, so you had Muslim Brotherhood win in 2008, right after he went and gave his speech at Cairo.
Right.
You know, saying if you will only unclench
your fist.
You know, that speech. And yet, as soon as a democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood president wins and starts authoring a Sharia constitution, you have a coup.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Then we do it again.
Yeah, and then we put in a guy that went to the United States War College in Assisi and then suspend elections.
Yeah. And it's not like the Egyptian people are dumb.
They had the guy they voted for.
Right. Like anything you watch on the Arab Spring in any documentary, Tad's woke like me. He watches a lot of documentaries. Like anything you watch about that, they all blame the U.S. for these coups. They all know what's going on.
Yeah, they're not stupid. They're on Twitter.
Right.
Yep.
So they're all comparing notes.
Where do you think the training and the support systems for the new regime...
Absolutely.
Get that knowledge and that funding.
So
Egyptian people also love Trump, by the way.
He's
making the pyramids gold again.
They're going to make a new Sphinx for him.
Yeah. Allowed Hillary Clinton's toppling of Gaddafi in Libya.
Yeah, I mean, that was something he was advised on. He clearly knew about. Mm-hmm. And it was advised by the best foreign policy minds that overthrowing Gaddafi would be a good thing.
Yep.
The emails just came out, too, I believe, between mm-hmm. him and Biden.
Expansion of the drone program and Anwar al-Awlaki's son.
Yeah, so his son died. Was an American citizen and got droned.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What was the stat? Aaron, you memed it. It was how many bombs are dropped every minute under Obama?
20?
It was eight bombs every 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yep. And so the Nobel Peace Prize winner.
but that wasn't entirely his fault. He didn't.
What, the bombing?
He didn't apply for the Nobel Peace Prize. He just won it because of the irrational belief in his abilities.
Well, because they wanted to fuck you to Bush. So here's my thing with drones, okay? Let's not debate the merits of whether or not we should have war, mm-hmm. okay? Because we're all in agreement that we shouldn't interfere in other countries and we shouldn't have war, and war is destructive to
everything.
It sets us back completely. But if there is going to be conflict, if there is going to be war, isn't it better to have the drone program than to have boots on the ground, to have expensive fighter jets, in reality, if you're going to fight a war, wouldn't you rather have drones instead of more deaths?
Yeah, I mean, if you're accepting moral relativism, it is way better from a humanitarian perspective, through a nationalistic view, mm-hmm.
sure.
to not have American lives at risk.
And I think overseas, too, because there
unless
are people...
bombing Americans.
Right.
Well... Because, like,
unless we're getting, you know,
there are certainly, but in war, there's going to be casualties. The whole point of war is to kill people and break stuff. And so
you
have highly targeted, and so you're not going in, and we don't have Dresden.
And now we just have perpetual, like, transactional war.
Right.
And it used to be war was a all-out crime, humanitarian crime, so then it would stop.
Well, again, like, you know, the whole... like we killed 1 million people in Japan, okay, because we dropped so many ordnance. The American people killed 1 million Japanese. You look at Dresden, you look at Berlin, you look at Europe after World War II, and these cities are just completely decimated. We don't mm-hmm. have that kind of war anymore, and thank God, because that kills a lot of civilians.
But what has that accomplished?
We have perpetual war.
Yeah, we have perpetual war. War is a game now. War is a game.
No, it's
a game. It's a toy. We put toys on the map and we watch them go out because we have no lives at stake.
Sure.
Yeah, and the drones are going to be outdated anyway, because if you're actually doing war now, it's more small fractions, sections, just going off lone wolf style. It's not nation war anymore.
And that's where we get back to Harry's point, where then you get to the point where you go, okay, what is the virtue of this?
Right. Mm-hmm. When wars are dehumanized, God no longer lends a helping hand.
Mm. Robot wars.
All right.
We are just the sex organs of the machine world.
Oh, cool.
With our batteries.
Nihilismo. He completely passed on playing a role on the racial issues of Ferguson and Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, they just released the Justice Report, just released their findings in Chicago, where they had a black site. They had a CIA black site in Chicago, and that's his hometown. He passed.
He didn't say a word.
Yeah, passed. Most people have passed on it. This happened under Obama, not Trump.
Ferguson, every time something happened, it was every time. It's like, well, let's wait to see what the facts are, rather than why is the National Guard violating posse comitatus?
I think...
Well, because it's not... Because they're not federal, they're state, it's okay.
So if you remember...
But
in
still, it's not okay. Oh, well, it's not okay. Yeah,
police officers shouldn't have deadly force.
Correct, or point guns at civilians, yeah.
I think he got bit in 2010 with Harold Gates, the professor at Harvard that he was friends with.
Yeah.
He was a black professor who was trying to break into his own house and got in trouble, and he said, you know, the police acted stupidly, and it was this big deal. Because he was perceived as anti-police. And they did, and he was right. And then he had to have the beer summit with a cop and Biden, and he sat down and had a beer with him. And I think that maybe that kind of muted his desire to speak out on this kind of stuff.
That's because, not leadership, though.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah. It's cowardice.
And I do think that, like, if a Trump presidency gets a report like the Chicago report, I think because... a Republican, and Trump especially, is seen as weak when it comes to helping the black community. Trump has this hard on for helping the black community, and I think he's going to do more to try and fix those sorts of things.
If you can
president.
Get the community economically successful, you eliminate the rest of the problems.
Exactly.
Right. Jobs first, especially, you know, labor-intensive manufacturing and service jobs where, you know, you need a lot of hands, but not necessarily a lot of skilled hands.
Correct.
Focus on that. Get jobs, get money in the community, then use grants and like third-party organizations to sort of lead development, and you can really solve a lot of the crimes and the they feel exploited in those communities and ignored.
Correct. Yeah. And just get out of the damn way.
Yeah.
Right.
Get out of the
economic
way.
Freedom zones, like he's talked about, Rand Paul's idea.
Yeah, get out of the damn way. Having all that time and trial just to braid hair when a lot of those... It stifles the black community to be able to create businesses.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
and Trump understands that, trying to do business in New York.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. You have to hire a mob attorney.
Yeah.
Did nothing to reform the surveillance state or NSA's unconstitutional practices. Hypocritical when one considers how central the covert CIA torture programs were in his campaign. This is one of the most astounding pieces of hypocrisy between candidate Obama and President Obama. You know, when it comes to this, you look at what he said and what he did, and it was, so.
And it goes back, he was either lying about being the civil libertarian-ish person he campaigned as, or the situation is so different than the way it's portrayed and what we actually know that it changed his viewpoint. It's either or.
Yep.
Or he doesn't control anything, and it's.
Puppet. Which is probably the most likely outcome.
Yeah.
Well, or he can say, I'm going to do this, and they're just going to say, okay, whatever, we're going to do it anyway behind your back. And
carry it, and you don't have authority to check us. Mm-hmm.
Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act tightens capital requirements on large banks and other financial institutions, requires derivatives to be sold on clearinghouses and exchanges, mandates that large banks provide living wills to avoid chaotic bankruptcies, limits their ability to trade with customers' money for their own profit, and creates the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Yeah, so the idea is that, you know, banks can lend at like 33-to-1 fractional reserve banking,
right,
and it lowered the ratio. Then as far as the derivatives, it was people offering the right but not the obligation to get insurance on the risk they were taking. And then Glass-Steagall was where in banks where you deposit money couldn't use that money to make trades and bets to do speculation in the stock market. That's why you have like Goldman Sachs. And so he created a clearinghouse where those derivatives, instead of just being completely privately offered with no real frame of reference as to whether or not the ratio they were trading at or the price was worth it, it created sort of a standardized exchange and clearinghouse. And then the CFPB was really designed to crack down on predatory lending practices, which happens even in the for-profit colleges. People who they know are very unlikely to pay it back are targeted, then loaded up with federally guaranteed student loans, and basically just treated as an ongoing like an insurance of the recurring revenue stream.
Yeah.
Residual, like a residual, because they know that eventually it'll be paid, even though that student will never graduate.
Correct. Yeah.
And so that can be good and bad. You know, as libertarians, we hate it. At the end of the day, there's a lot of dumb consumers that get exploited. And, and then we're responsible because it's federally guaranteed.
Yeah. The awful thing about that it mostly just helps like white middle class people, because most black people or minorities get hit with that stuff anyways when it comes tax season. They get their tax checks and they go out and buy cars that they can't afford. But on paper, they look like they can because they've got this tax return check, and they end up buying a car, then they get repoed. And the cycle, and that's why it's awesome to buy a car like a few months after the everyone got their tax check, because there's a lot of cool repo cars at the auction. I'm not the only one that buys repo cars.
The sweet discount.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that goes into the next part on the list. You know, he nationalized the student loan program. It used to be there were, you know, the banks. What the federal government did is they insured the loans made by banks and paid them a small premium in order to offer student loans.
Yeah.
Now he just centralized everything, not unlike the difference between giving VA vouchers and then the VA system as it exists now.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought was that it'd be huge cost savings. Turns out their data was so, they were lying about the data, and it is going to be an endless pit of money we're never going to get back unless they do wage garnishment.
Right.
That's the only option.
Don't you?
And it's awful. And some of these students are awful with their like their student loan debt. Like, oh, so you can't possibly pay this
back. People have no idea what they got into, and it was poorly explained, or they didn't even look into what they were getting into.
Yeah.
It's predatory lending.
And then,
oh, yeah.
And then how quick it comes on. I mean, 6 months after you're out, good luck. There's your first bill for $1,200 a month.
Yeah.
And you know, you could make the argument a liberal arts education at a college institution is predatory lending.
Yeah.
They know that your job isn't going to pay you enough if you load it up.
You're a political science major, something like that.
You could make that. There's a pretty good case to be made. And education in the United States is our national religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, saying that, no, you shouldn't maybe go and major in philanthropy at IUPUI and take out $80,000.
But a lot of them, like, are kind of like whining babies about their student loans, though. Some of them, some people have like a $60,000 loan payment for like 10 years. And I'm like, man, you know how many. You could have paid that off in 10 years, just paying a little bit.
Yeah, you just couldn't have gone out to the bars every weekend.
Yeah, put the iPhone down.
right.
Yeah, they want to be victims about it, and they signed it, you know.
So that was something that was really bad, because the idea was cost savings, and it turns out that private institutions manage the administration so much more efficiently than the government.
Yeah.
It's going to be an ongoing hole forever. Eventually, it'll get to a point where it'll be like Fannie and Freddie, and they'll end up getting the assets and then auctioning them off. And having a government-sponsored entity. Because there's no way it can keep going like it is now.
And don't
student loan debt's higher than all credit card and auto debt in the United States.
Yeah, it's going to be the next bubble.
Yeah, except it's right now protected because it's completely government-owned and they can print.
Right.
If they put it on the private market, it would be you'd have to bail it out.
Stop. Can you guys shut up for a second? Don't you add her.
I already did.
Stop. Oh, God, you're such a fucking
just
asshole.
Just kidding, I didn't.
Creepertarian intensifies. They've been over there looking at nudes together.
I've been trying to, not nudes, but somebody I'm interested in, and he, dickbag over here, added her. Like,
why would you show
him? I didn't this time. Not yet.
Don't,
he will.
Yeah, he will.
Why would you show him?
I'm an idiot. I was trying to get his opinion.
Why would you want his opinion?
I don't know. I don't know why.
He lives in the basement.
He doesn't even sleep with his wife.
Where's the problem with that?
Although the picture that you just posted of me in the group with my headband on from the last episode is hilarious.
I told you you looked like a dodgeball extra.
That is amazing.
The rest of the stuff's...
No, let's we're going to keep going.
Titan sanctions on Iran...
You can see that as good and bad.
I see it as bad because they're the less, you know, they're not, Shia Islam is not the radical jihadists. You know, it's Persian Empire. There's no reason the U.S. and Iran should be opponents.
I've never understood why we view, I mean, I get that they fund a lot of terrorism, but they are natural allies.
It's because we overthrew their regime. Like, it's so it's butthurt and a dick measuring standoff.
We got caught.
Baby Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, we got caught, so we're embarrassed.
Thank God we do. Since there were two Saudi nationals on the damn planes on 9/11.
Lily Ledbetter Fair Pay Act.
That gives women, it used to be women only had 180 days to sue if they could prove they were being discriminated against on pay for the same role. If there was a way to document it in the court system, the statute of limitations is only 6 months. Now it is, I'm not sure how long it is, but it's dramatically longer.
Yep. Save America Act in 2009.
Tripling of AmeriCorps, basically just sort of not unlike Teach for America, to take people who are having trouble finding jobs and put them into downtrodden communities to do the things usually you'd rely on volunteering and community service. It was basically like a very small-scale WPA.
Expanded hate crimes protections.
Yep.
Harry. Sorry, man.
They included LGBTQ.
Yeah. Barbecue. LGBT barbecue.
And we don't want to protect people from hate crimes, Greg?
It's more of like the... who cares if they hate them? It's a crime.
Under the Equal Protection Clause, ideally, mm-hmm. you know, that should cover it. But given the need for, obviously, things for additional protections,
right.
specifically pointing out, we created protective classes, so we might as well create them all.
Correct. Yeah. Just like the defense of, the Defense of Women Act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that piece of crap act there. Just to say, look, I stand up for the women. I raised my hand for this act.
Yeah, it's really the Lawyer Full Employment Act.
And then we got the then we got the War on Women Act because they turned that one down.
Right.
Expanded health coverage for children. How could you hate helping keep kids healthy?
I can.
How can you hate it?
Yeah, how could you be against that, Greg?
Well, I hate children.
Well, I know that.
I mean, have you met young kids today? Our generation's really the last good one. I think we should get rid of the rest.
I have a delightful niece. She's amazing. So's the other niece.
They're all germ.
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to put her before a board who will either say yay or nay.
Signed 2009.
Ooh, the Obama death panel?
Signed 2009 Children's Health Insurance Authorization Act, which allows the Children's Health Insurance Premium, our program, CHIP, to cover health care for 4 million more children. Paid for by a tax increase on tobacco products.
And SCHIP's really about people that are working poor that made too much for Medicaid, and so kids were going without insurance. It created coverage for those individuals,
right.
for those kids by taxing tobacco producers.
Correct, yeah, but it's okay. Everyone vapes now.
I mean, it's one of those things. I'm fine with it, but it is government expansion.
Yeah.
Don't smoke, but if you do, pay us a lot.
Well, that's the stupidity of the design. That's my real problem is that... You're trying to end smoking while at the same time, if it does happen, you create a massive budget deficit.
Right.
Last is no olive branch or pardon of Snowden. Now, we have, 12 hours here before, it was as of it. So it could be a full pardon tomorrow. Who knows? But
he doesn't have the balls.
I don't think that he will. I just don't think most people would care.
It would prevent him. It would tarnish his legacy in a way. He wouldn't necessarily be able to make as much money. Like he would, I'm not sure you could have him. Champion as many causes as will.
I feel like his people are for that, though.
Yeah, I think
they are, but they don't have money.
But I look at it.
He
and
wants
I go,
a Cadillac.
The Al Gore type. The limousine liberals are not pro Snowden. Yeah. Pardon.
But to me, Manning and Snowden, people didn't have any outrage to the Manning thing. Really,
that's a libertarian phenomenon. Like I don't have a single non-pro liberty friend that doesn't see Edward Snowden as a traitor that put us at risk to Al Qaeda. Anyone that's apolitical or every single person thinks he's a traitor.
Right. Propaganda. All right, well, let's wrap
Considering
up.
Considering he used, Bin Laden used dial-up internet and, traded with hard disk, floppy disk to communicate.
Right, yeah, offline, yeah.
Yeah, we weren't catching Al-Qaeda with surveillance state. Yeah.
Let's wrap up and give your farewell address to Barack Obama. Aaron Ewer, your farewell address to Barack Obama.
Oh, where do I start with Mr. Obama?
Where do you start?
Where do I start?
Send him an invoice for your increased health premiums.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I was spending $10,000 a year for 10 years on insurance and never used it. So that's $100,000 I could have saved had I known.
it's all just a risk.
And paid for my own health care. But hopefully if Trump does anything, he gets rid of the Affordable Care Act and doesn't replace it with anything, but it sounds like he
wants to cover everybody, and it's just dude,
he doesn't know what he's doing.
He doesn't know what he's saying.
Exactly. Greg's gonna regret supporting him, but no, I mean, I think he kind of lost his steam 2 or 3 years in, and he's just been on autopilot ever since. And he's a shell of who he used to be and who I used to hate. And now I just kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah. So. He's in prison like Assange and Snowden are.
Yeah, he's. I feel like he's trapped in a loveless marriage with a country he used to love, and that used to love him.
Well, God damn! All right, Harry.
I used to know.
Your farewell address to Barack Obama.
Goodbye, Obama. The good things you've done was help get Manning out. Help. Give some respect to us white talking black guys. Also, I'm also glad you're out because you get to relax, work on your jump shot, and I can finally start talking to more of my family because, you know, you have always been a very touchy subject because they don't like criticizing you. And now that you're gone, I can criticize the president again and government as a whole, and they'll actually listen instead of just rejecting all of it.
Do a lot of black families, like Irish, I grew up in a household that had a picture of Kennedy in it because they were Catholic, and it was a huge deal to have a picture of Kennedy because he was the first Catholic president. Mm-hmm. Do a lot of black families have a picture of Obama?
Yes, several. Like, I think, like, one thing my mom told me is, like, I could finally think my son can become president now that Obama's become president. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember all the stores that popped up in the malls after Obama got elected?
Oh, yeah.
They were just like the Obama stores.
Right. Yep. Like, tchotchkes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember those.
Those were the days.
Tad Western.
What's happening? Barack. It was a decent 8 years, I guess. Did a halfway decent job. Didn't manage to fuck up anything too bad, I don't think. Just kidding. I don't know. Hopefully Trump isn't going to be, I don't know if he's going to be as bad. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it really matters, to be honest with you.
You really gave up, didn't you?
Yeah, I gave up like Obama did after he got elected.
Greg Lenz?
I think the biggest things he will do or accomplish will come post-presidency.
Mm-hmm.
His popularity is only going to grow. He's going to be a favorite of everyone. His rhetorical skills are amazing. He's the best orator I've ever seen in any medium. Entertainment, period. Like, he can motivate people with a public speaking like I've never seen.
Yeah.
I'll miss that because that was fun to watch. You know, he was a great public speaker.
I can say, though, that I never... he didn't give many primetime addresses or Oval Office addresses. I mean, it's not like Bush where you had those big moments.
He was a person that didn't get those big moments.
Yeah.
The left always hated that about Clinton, is he never got a
moment
that makes a great president.
Right.
You know, crisis moment. But I don't know. He's disappointing to liberals. He's disappointing to conservatives. To a lot of... culturally, he's very relevant in that it's like Harry said, he's proof that a lot of kids will, you know, say they wanted to become president in 20 years because of Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this country, there was a misread. Him winning, people thought that the country was trending towards center left. He was ineffective at every... I mean, he created Trumpism. He created the Tea Party Revolution.
Right.
You know, he... basically reignited the Reagan America that were a center-right country by just trying to create a new New Deal, if you will.
Right.
You know, he really, really created a cultural backlash in a movement that most people thought was dead.
Right.
And it turns out that America is just, they're just anti-authority. There's just a part of us that we don't like the same people in power. We hate dynasties. We just are, it doesn't really matter the political philosophy or the politics. We just like being contrarian and anti-whatever. Yeah. There's just something in our blood about that. And we are still a slightly center-right country, and that shocks me.
Yeah.
Because I would have never expected that when he won. I thought we would be a European-style social democracy.
Yeah.
Focused on social justice and righting a lot of economic wrongs.
The American people really surprised us on Election Day.
They did. They did.
You know,
and there are two Americas. That's his impact, is that there is that America alive and well, and it's the future of the Democratic Party, but it is still smaller than white Reagan Republican America.
It's all these people who were preaching to us about coming together. Now all of the sudden, they're not for coming together anymore, Greg.
No, they are the merchants of death. You know, divisiveness.
Right.
Death.
So,
but overall, I think I didn't love him. I was very afraid of him, but I did not because of anything other than it damned us towards one path. But in closing, he was a guy that just put too much faith in his ability to get people in a room and reach an agreement, and underestimated how much of the bully pulpit you need to use in exploiting people. Politics is dirty, and he hates that.
So for me, so I spent a lot of 2016 reading through and studying the civil rights movement. You know, and obviously as a white person, I don't have the understanding or comprehension of the world from Harry's perspective, for instance. And that's why it's important to have friends like Harry who can, so we can sit down and say, well, I've had this experience since Obama's been in office that we wouldn't. Like, and so when you go back and you spend a lot of time studying the details of the civil rights movement, it's unfathomable for people our age who live in this country. It's hard to understand the level of violence and hatred that came from the governments of the South, because the people of the South were conflicted. Many people still kind of are like this today. People of the South were, they were racist, they were bigoted, they did want to support a system of this is the way it's always been done, but at the same time, they weren't for lynching. They weren't for killing people. They just didn't want to disrupt their economic incentive and their fear, because they didn't know what would come out of the end of segregation. It's what they knew. They were barely hanging on. Whites and blacks both were barely hanging on financially in the South in the 60s and the late 50s. And the end of segregation was scary because what if this makes my financial situation worse? And so they did see, both blacks and whites saw Martin Luther King and the other civil rights activists as a threat, as going too far. And in the letter to from the Birmingham jail, Martin Luther King talks about the people, the white liberal is the man who stands by and says, now is not the time. Now is, you know, all the things that we hear today when you want to push forward on an ideology. Now is not the time. Is this appropriate? You've gone too far. Your beliefs are too out of the mainstream. And you see those people who are brave pushing through not only the violence of the government of the South, but also the apathy of the population of the South, of both black and white. And it is those people who we as a country most identify with today. We're not the racist Bull Connor. We're not the Martin Luther King. We're the apathetic people in the middle who think that things ought to be different, but we're not willing to be uncomfortable and make a change. And Barack Obama is someone who wants things to be better and is willing to stand up and try and make things better the best he knows how. We disagree with him. We don't see the government as an agent of good. We see it as an agent of oppression. We see the logical conclusion of bigger government as the governments of the South, agents of oppression. And so when you study the civil rights era, you recognize that for people who lived in that system, the election of Barack Obama, like if you watch The Butler, Lee Daniels' The Butler, where the butler served all these presidents, and then on election night he watches the election of Barack Obama and starts crying because he grew up in a system where he was born a crime, and then all of a sudden that crime was president of the United States. And so to me, Barack Obama represents, like the civil rights movement, the best of America. 50 years after Martin Luther King stands on the steps of the Washington Monument, or the Lincoln Memorial, and says, you need to live up to the promises that you wrote down on paper. The things that you wrote in the Declaration of Independence, do you believe it or not, America? Are you going to fulfill your promises? And so one day I want my children to be judged by the content of the character and not the color of their skin. And 50 years later, we elect a president based on the content of his character and the policies that he represented and not the color of his skin. And I've seen, when I posted this, people, oh, well, he was elected only because he was black. No, fuck you. You're an idiot. He was elected because George Bush was a horrible president and Barack Obama was a change agent, and people weren't happy with the way Washington worked, and they thought he was going to change it, and he greatly disappointed those people, and that's how we ended up with Trump.
He was inspirational and happy. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the...
Absolutely.
You know, and the one, to me, the biggest failure, the biggest gift he's given to libertarianism is that his election inspired so many people to think that government was, you know, yes, we can. It mm-hmm. is an institution of good.
Right.
That is gone.
Right.
Completely.
This totally disillusioned.
And if no one can do it, if anyone could have done it, it would have been him.
It was.
And yeah. he would have had enough people on his side, and he proved that it, no matter what you want it to be with the best of intentions,
the days
is not something that can be used to right wrongs.
Because mm-hmm. when you grow the FDR, because he has the charisma of FDR, but at the end of the day, FDR had a very small government that he then he wrangled through two crises into this monster. But now the monster is so big that the charisma of FDR can't overcome the monster that has been created. And so the monster has to be destroyed. And there's nobody who in politics today who can destroy the monster like Donald Trump. And so I think that a lot of us will sit here and at this moment in time have hope that Donald Trump can destroy the monster. I think we're going to be disappointed in 4 or 8 years.
You should, yeah, he won't be Reagan, but Reagan wasn't Reagan.
Of course.
You know, we turn everybody into Santa Claus after they leave.
Right.
I mean, basically, like MLK, we turn it, look, I mean, it's like the thing, it's that judge, I want my kids to be judged by the content of their character, but not me.
Yep.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. It's even happened to Bush now.
Oh, yeah. He's right. Whitewashed to an extent.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Biden is Obama's greatest weapon in turning Obama into, like, the Biden memes have made Obama and the Biden memes, more than anything else, I think, have helped us feel nostalgic for the Obama years, at the end of the Obama years, because we look at it and we go, ah, I like Joe and Obama.
Well, yeah. I mean, they weren't radical.
Right.
I mean, the healthcare was, it'll be gone.
Right.
His biggest achievement
tomorrow
will be gone, and he wasted all his political capital on it.
Yeah.
But
no, day one starts not tomorrow on Friday. It starts on Monday. I don't think
you know Donald Trump. He works through the night.
No, he said he's starting on Monday. He's going to take the weekend.
Okay. Well, he won't have a chance. They have a full, you know, they have 4,000 positions to fill.
Yes.
Yeah. And some pieces of his cabinet's got meetings on Sundays.
Yeah. So to me, Obama, the greatest part of the Obama presidency is what I felt the night that Obama was elected. It's what I felt.
All downhill from there?
It's what I felt.
It literally was.
In that gym in Plainfield. It is that for 30% of our population that still suffers the effects of slavery, the ghost of Jim Crow, anything is possible. And it isn't just about black people. It's about all of us. It is about a country that can change. And all it takes is a small group of people meeting in a church in Birmingham, Alabama in the late 1950s to radically set course, change the course of history so that a black man can be elected president within their lifetimes. And so when we feel that society and that politics and that government cannot be changed, we look to the civil rights movement and Obama and say, yes, we can, because it is possible. It just takes effort.
Giving a damn. And
grit. And so that is my favorite thing about Barack Obama. It is that he...
The culmination.
...is the fulfillment of Martin Luther King's dream in terms of politics.
Yeah.
There's a long way to go when it comes to our society being equitable.
He assuages a lot of white guilt.
But at the same time, our society is equitable. It is our government that is not equitable.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
It is our government.
That's his greatest contribution to us.
Yep.
You know, because there was a, you know, Kennedy died before he could have disappointed.
Yeah.
Whereas Barack Obama had the almost same sense of excitement and cult worship and hope, mm-hmm. around, you know, that government could do good. And he disappointed virtually every liberal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We are glad that Barack Obama is done. We are glad that this is Barack Obama's last night in the White House. And we are also not necessarily happy that tomorrow is Trump's first day.
I am.
You are.
I see a lot of positive signs.
So.
The national security stuff is where the big breaking point. But outside of that, man, I've been impressed with the people. I mean, Rick Perry alone wanting to shut down his own agency, I love.
I know.
Yeah,
did you see the exchange with him and Franken? If you haven't, go. It's on CNN's Facebook page where he and Franken are going back and forth, exchanging pleasantries, and basically he says something gay, and the whole place cracks up. It's very funny. So look up that. All right, thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We love you all. Thank you so much for joining us. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.